Hi, I'm Chris, the co-host of True Believers, a comic book podcast, my weekly show about all things comics and loosely pop culture. This episode of True Believers is made in partnership with Magic Mind. This is an episode I've been working on for a long time, and I'm excited to see it released. So, today, please join me as we enter the multiverse. No madness required. In media, the multiverse is a concept that asserts the idea that multiple parallel universes or otherwise alternate realities can exist simultaneously. These universes often feature different versions of characters, settings, and events, allowing creators to explore different storylines and take beloved characters in unexpected directions, with some notable examples of multiverses in comic book history being Marvel Comics' Marvel Multiverse, which encompasses different realities like the Marvel Universe, Earth 616, and the Ultimate Universe, Earth 1610, which has its own distinct versions of iconic characters like Spider-Man, and Spider-Man, as seen in animated films, and live-action ones that aren't very good. A couple standout storylines from their primary competitor, Detective Comics Comics, aka DC, are The Crisis on Infinite Earths and Worlds Collide, which were landmark events that set out to streamline the DC multiverse and consolidate many of its parallel worlds. Both had lasting effects on the DC universe and paved the way for future crossovers and events, particularly Worlds Collide, which merges a milestone comics universe, or Earth-M, with the main DC Comics continuity. In fact, outside of DC's Elseworlds, almost every major multiversal event is there to reconcile the company's past and future, which I think on anybody else would be kind of strange, but I kind of rock with it, except for New 52, I kind of rock with it. So now that I've covered the background, I want to explore what the meaning of the multiverse is. Not only the intention, but what exactly makes the multiverse appealing? Is it possibility, creative freedom, the ability to explore new interpretations of characters to ask, what if, and crossover characters who would otherwise never meet? The multiverse goes beyond merely expanding our knowledge of comic book universes, or universes in general. It also acts as a mirror for our reality. Without restriction, we're allowed to go on journeys through the essence of our identities, experience the repercussions of our decisions, good or bad, and the potential for second chances. As we explore alternate realities, we discover fresh perspectives and insights that can, in turn, inform our own experiences and emotions. Beyond comic books, of course, we see the concept in movies, TV shows, and even video games. Although it's well known that I don't play them or necessarily approve. So what does it mean that we live in a timeline where the multiverse has become such a significant part of popular culture? Our reality is just one piece of a vast cosmic puzzle. It challenges the notion that our universe is the only one, and it invites us to consider the existence of infinite variations and possibilities. So here we are raising questions about the way that we individually perceive our reality. We're confronting the inherent human fascination with the unknown, the final frontier, the undiscovered country. We get a chance to envision what could be, to transcend our limitations and to dream of a future where anything is possible. This form of storytelling, it reminds us that even in the face of uncertainty, there are vast and awe-inspiring worlds waiting for us to explore. Speaking of, comics got their taste for the multiverse in 1961 in The Flash of Two Worlds, so it's only fitting that I don't start there and never bring it up again. You didn't think I was gonna make it easy for you, did you? No, this is a themed episode. So theme one, identity. Now, when we talk about identity, we talk about not only what it means to be who we are, but what it means to be who we are in the world that we live in and to have made all of the choices that we've made, to have all of the choices that were made for us be made. Every single universe that is branched off from this one could be the result of going left instead of right down a corridor, or cheating on a test, or getting a different job, moving to California. I could have said moving to Wales. That would have been so great. So it's only fitting that I talk about one of the real OG multiverses? Star Trek. So anybody who's ever even kind of maybe sort of heard of Star Trek has heard of the Mirror Universe. One of my very favorite Mirror episodes, well, I have two. Mirror, Mirror, obviously it's the OG from Star Trek, the original series. And through the Mirror Darkly or Through the Looking Glass Dark? I don't know, but it's a Deep Space Nine episode. It's really, really good. I'm not here to talk about that. Let's talk about the Mirror Universe in general. It is the most buck wild concept. There are so many quote-unquote tropes that spin off of Star Trek that it is absolutely insane. I had no idea that the idea that when you go to another universe, the evil version of you is gonna have a beard came from Star Trek. And it is so easy to see that, because Mirror Mirror is just those people on the whatever the Enterprise is when it's not the Enterprise. This is a very well and poorly researched episode of True Believers, but those people on the alternate Enterprise, they're nuts. But when you think about the ways that the universes diverged, you understand exactly what happened to get to this darker universe. This is an unkind world where everyone is selfish. Everyone is out for their own good. The motto of the United Federation of Planets or whatever, this is not their motto. This is like their mission statement. Their motto is X asterisk, like CNTR or whatever, like to the stars, or from the stars, knowledge to the stars. I don't speak Latin, but these are not explorers. They're not going boldly where no one's ever gone before. These are takers. They take. These are people who, they're conquerors. They're soldiers. It's in no way what we could have expected. But the one person who remains even mostly the same is Commander Spock. Spock, even though his people are still warlike like they were in the past before the influence of Sarek's philosophy and principles of logic and reason, I don't even personally believe that Vulcans actually believe that, but before that influence, they're more warlike people. And so he has that spirit in him, and you can see that. But you see Spock's, like, his personality isn't exactly sedate. I don't know what I would call it, just chill as hell. He has the same cadence, the same intonation. Like, this Spock is not everybody else. When they get beamed into the regular universe, they act like wild animals, and Spock is able to quickly ascertain that these are not the same people from his universe, and he acts so contrary to how the rest of them act, and so in line with how the Spock from, I want to say our universe, but I don't live in Star Trek, but from proper beardless Spock, he's so alike to the Spock of our universe that it makes you question, is this the way that Spock is supposed to be in every universe? Is this one thing a universal constant?
It's not necessarily that Spock is inherently good, it's that we all have the capacity to be good as long as we have the desire.
And even at the end, or not at the end, but in the future when we return to the Mirrorverse and it's still really, 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 really crabby, bad, and sad, we're left with the knowledge that Spock tried to bring logic and order to the galaxy.
And failed, because everybody there sucks.
So when we think of identity and we think of the multiverse, we have to think, are there some things to our personality that remain constant no matter where we are, that no matter what our life is like, no matter what our circumstances are like, is one thing about me going to remain the same no matter where I am? And my further best example of that is a film that we covered earlier in our podcast history. Nobody really liked this episode except me and Andrew. I think it's called Tale of Two Booties, but we did a review of Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans. It is one of my favorite movies ever because I'm immature and because I really enjoyed Teen Titans Go to the movies. It is literally, I think it might have come out within months of Avengers, which one is the second one? of Avengers Endgame, and it is, from what I've seen, like, it's got all these portals to the with the people coming out. It's so similar, and for it to be an animated movie and come out around the same time, that is so freaking funny. And based on the fact that I've seen one and not the other, I'd say it's the better movie. It's so much fun. But when I said that identity is central to these multiversal stories, this is a prime example, because we are seeing the Teen Titans who we know from childhood. If you're around my age, the Teen Titans from the Teen Titans animated series in 2003, and we're seeing the more modern Teen Titans with Teen Titans Go, the smaller, goofier, the silly versions. And I personally think Teen Titans Go was all right and fine, but when the Teen Titans of 2003 are confronted with them, it's easy to realize that for them, this is a dark mirror. This is all of their worst and most obnoxious traits turned up to 11. I think I even said that in this episode. They, Robin especially, they then have to contend with, is this who I am? And is this how others perceive me? Is this, are the things that I don't like about myself constant throughout the universe? And we even see this with the other versions of the Titans who come, because there are even quote-unquote Titans. They're not teens. They're edgy. The Nightwing, I believe, and yes, I did say that, like Starfire does, even though I think it's silly. I thought it was cute when she said it. Nightwing of that universe, I believe he's got the red suit. He's more serious. He's even darker, even broodier. And next to the Robin from 2003, the Robin of Teen Titans Go feels inadequate, but next to Nightwing, the Robin of 2003 feels super inadequate, and next to Nightwing, Teen Titans Go Robin feels indescribably inadequate, to the point where at the end of the film he tries to like steal his clothes and go back to his universe to be with the serious Titans, even though that's not who he is and that's not where he belongs. That's where he feels like he should belong. And when we consider where we should belong, or where we feel like we should belong, I have to take us to one of my favorite films of the last like 10 years, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This whole movie is about identity. I would say the second movie is about more repercussions or potential, or perhaps even something else. Actually, I would say that the second film takes us in a completely different direction that I'll discuss later. But Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, it asks you to put on the mask. It asks you, can you be Spider-Man? Anyone can be Spider-Man. Anyone can wear the mask. Figuratively and literally, we are told sooner or later, it always fits. With great power comes great responsibility. These are the things we've heard about Spider-Man our whole lives. This is what we know. So we're introduced to a new Spider-Man. We're introduced not to Peter. Well, first, we are introduced to Peter Parker, but then we're introduced to Miles Morales, a young boy from Brooklyn. He has a mom and a dad. He has an uncle, Aaron. He goes to a special school where he dorms during the week and goes home on the weekends. He's loved by his neighborhood. He's smart. He's funny. He's kind. And he is Spider-Man. And in the beginning, he does not feel that he is enough to be Spider-Man because he's not Peter Parker, because he doesn't know, he doesn't have a handle on his abilities. He allows what people's perception of Spider-Man is, and what even the other spider people who were introduced, what their definition of what a Spider-Man is, he lets that influence him. He doesn't have the space in the context of this film to figure out who his Spider-Man is, to figure out who he is inside of being Spider-Man. He's perhaps the only Spider-Man who had an opportunity for mentorship, and because of that, he doesn't have the independence that a young Peter Parker or a young Peter Porker or a young Peter. I'm sorry, I really was gonna go through all of them, but I just couldn't. In some ways, their presence in his universe is a blessing and a curse. In some ways, he's able to learn how to wall crawl and web sling with the best of them. These are the I was going to say the spider people that we all know, but they're the spider people that I don't know. I don't know how much everybody else was into the Spider-Verse before the movie came out, because I was deep in it. Once I saw Gwen Stacy and I was like, you're alive! I was buying the Spider-Gwen car. I was buying them and crying. He loses out on an opportunity for independence that they had, because he's not the one and only Spider-Man in his universe. Because he is the second Spider-Man, he loses an opportunity to forge his own identity that I don't know that they would agree was a good thing, because in many ways it wasn't. Like, everyone's becoming Spider-Man is kind of marred by incredible tragedy, but their ability to say, this is who I am going to be moving forward, and to be the one and only Spider-Man of your universe, it in many ways it is a privilege that Miles will never have. But also the Miles of I think it's the Miles of the Ultimate Universe and the Miles of now, well, no, I think the Miles of the Ultimate Universe became Spider-Man in the exact same way. But Miles Morales, because he is the second Spider-Man in various forms of media, the Peter Parker of his universe is there to mentor him, to be a guide, to be a confidant, a companion, someone that he can look up to, a role model. And in many ways, the other spider people, when they come into his movie, they fulfill that function, but it also deprives him of the ability to be that for himself and to move through the world without people's preconceived notions of what a Spider-Man should be. So in many ways, with the introduction of other spider people into his origin story, and even with Peter Parker having previously been Spider-Man before him, before his death in the film, Miles loses out on that identity.
Because even if it's ultimately a choice that he has to make for himself, he doesn't get to be the first person to choose it.
And we find out later in Across the Spider-Verse that in another universe, it's taken even further. But that's not where we're going right now. We're going into the repercussions of the multiverse. What I was talking about earlier, one turn left, one turn right, a job opportunity, a breakup, a makeup, in Doctor Strange's stupid case, the decision to text and dry, making your hands not work so you can't do surgery, so you have to become, you go from being a surgeon to being a sorcerer because you were stupid enough after all these years of med school and all these years of being rich to text and dry. And then you get to also, no, why did he do that? I honestly have to know. What, somebody told me, I believe, I think Andrew told me that the reason why he became Doctor Strange was because he was texting and driving in the movies. And I was like, you're lying. That can't be it. That's ridiculous. Nobody would put that in. And it was. I watched the whole thing and I was like, oh my god, he was texting. Well, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched like 60%. I was like, oh my god, he was texting and driving. Oh, it's so bad. Oh, I already don't like this. Oh. And then I watched the What If show, where we really did just ask what if. The things were so stupid. I was so mad because I feel like what if is really stupid. It's just a blatant opportunity for people to get their creative jollies out. That's fine. But in the comic books, it can get a bit racist. It can get a bit spooky-ooky at times. And in that TV show that they made, it was so unserious that it actually made me mad. The first episode, everybody knows I do not like Peggy Carter. Everybody knows this. I watched Captain Carter because my childhood crush is Chad Michael Murray, and for absolutely no other reason. So when episode one was, what if Captain Carter, or what if she stayed in the room? I was like, what? And then Peggy stayed in the room. Steve got shot or something and then couldn't become Captain America. So she decided that she was the best person to just get in this tank. And she became Captain Carter. But for some reason, she covered herself in the Union Jack, I guess because she's British. But I was like, ew. And then people kept calling her Captain Britain. I was like, no, there's a proper Captain Britain. This has nothing to do with the multiverse. These prompts were so ridiculous. The second one, R.I.P. Chadwick Boseman, but the second one was, what if T'Challa became Star-Lord? Became a Star-Lord. I'm not gonna lie, the only thing that prompted out of me, other than I did, this one was actually a little bit funny, so I did laugh. But the only thing that prompted out of me was the fact that I was telling people I wanted them to cast Hayden Christensen as Peter Quill in the MCU. And when he didn't get cast, I was very salty. Even though I don't think he put himself forward for the role, I just think they should maybe let me be his agent. I would believe in him. I would be his Shauna Roberts, even though Shauna is Vince's publicist on Entourage and she's not his agent. I would make sure Hayden was everywhere. You guys would be sick of him. But the Doctor Strange ones, the fact, it really pissed me off. It pissed me off more than anything that there are two What If episodes from the show that became really relevant. It really pisses me off. And the relevant ones from the What If show are, what if Captain Carter were the first Avenger, which I promise is not what they asked. These titles are nonsensical. And number four, what if Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands? Now, I was really upset when I watched What If. I had a really stank attitude throughout the two episodes, and I'm sorry for that. But when I watched Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I was even more mad. But that's because I had to watch Doctor Strange that day because I put it off and I didn't watch most of the movie. And then on the walk to town, to like a 25-minute walk, my friend Iman, shout out to my girly Iman, she was explaining the rest of the Doctor Strange movie to me because she really liked it. And the only reason me and Andrew went to go see this movie was because we had proposed that Multiverse of Madness crossover event with the other podcasts in the Hall of Pods. That is one of my What If moments, because it was me. I think Jordan was trying to get people together to do a No Way Home crossover, but neither one of us, like, I hadn't even seen Spider-Man Far From Home until I was on a plane back to Andrew after Christmas. So I watched No Way Home when a really good bootleg copy got online, and I was like, click, why not? Because I had, the only reason I watched it was because Tom and Georgie were with me. I had seen Far From Home on the plane as well as Amazing Spider-Man 2. So I was like, might as well. So this is my ripple. That was my moment. I was so angry when I realized that those two What If episodes were relevant and they were just testing the waters on me. Because when they went to that stupid other universe in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which already didn't make sense, it was a very stupid movie. Captain Carter was the first Avenger. I'm seeing all these other people. I didn't watch the Inhumans show. I know who Black Bolt is. So I was like, who the hell is this? Andrew tells me this guy was in the Inhumans show. I was like, go to hell. Nobody watched that. Least of all you. Andrew informed me he did in fact watch that show. And I think that was his moment. Then on top of that, Maria Rambeau was the Captain Marvel, or maybe she was Photon, I don't know, but she was the Captain Marvel of that universe. They were like, oh, there isn't a Doctor Strange. There isn't an Iron Man. They're dead. Professor X showed up and it was Patrick Stewart, and I just wanted to kiss his little bald head because I love him, but then I wanted to flick it because I hate Professor X, so it was a lot of complicated feelings there. And then, insult to injury, the friggin' evil Doctor Strange showed up. I was like, and he popped out. I don't think he had that nasty ass third eye in the cartoon, because I think they knew that was going to be a lot for people. But in Multiverse of Madness, he had this nasty ass third eye. And not only did the evil Doctor Strange had it, the quote unquote good Doctor Strange ended up developing it. But Multiverse of Madness as a whole was all about repercussions and regrets. It's not only about Doctor Strange, it's about Wanda Maximoff of the MCU, a character who I don't like in comic book format. Not because of the No More Mutants thing, but because, as anyone who's ever heard me talk, and I probably said it on this podcast before, I think having sex with robots is immoral. And I don't like Vision or Wanda. I don't like Vision because I don't like robots, and I don't like Wanda because they bone. I don't know, I just can't truck with that behavior. So Wanda is, the even crazier part is, it's also about my regrets, because I've actually seen WandaVision. My mom convinced me, well, my mom hates to be left out of a movement, so the society convinced her that WandaVision was really good. So we started watching it a couple of days before the last episode of WandaVision came out. So
we watched all of the episodes back to back to back, and my mom kind of liked when they would do the theme songs from, like, and the openings from shows that she knew and, like, grew up watching. But I didn't like any of it because it was boring. And, like, I have already seen all those other shows. And I like television, but I hate nostalgia bait. And I was like, why would I want to see her do a spin on Bewitched when I could just watch Bewitched? We literally have Bewitched on DVD. So at any point in time, I could just watch Bewitched if I wanted to watch Bewitched. I think Bewitched might even be on Tubi right now. So I think anybody with $0 and some free time could watch Bewitched, because I believe Bewitched is on Tubi right now. So I'm watching the aftermath of WandaVision, which is also the aftermath of Avengers Infinity War, I guess. I've seen Avengers Infinity War, really hated it, which is why I've never seen Avengers Endgame. WandaVision was so stupid. No, that's negative. I'm gonna be positive, Chris, today. WandaVision was such an interesting experience where we got to really go through the character's past, her backstory, her regrets, and even get a peek into her future, where we see that she has gotten the Darkhold, the evil magic book or whatever, from Agatha Harkness. But I don't know how the hell Agatha got it, because the last time I saw it, I remember it being on the Runaways TV show. So I was like, girl, when did you get this? But then I remembered that the reason why I have no joy and happiness in my life, aka why there are only two seasons of Cloak and Dagger, and why The Runaways doesn't still come on, is because they were canceled so that they could have synergy with the MCU. So because of the MCU, I have no joy and happiness in my life. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha. That was a joke. No, for real, jokes aside. So when we get into WandaVision... We get a lot of interesting takes, interesting lines, but we see her moving forward in a more positive direction with her life. But by the time she pulls up in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, which is apparently a horror movie, I don't know, I had a lot of inappropriate audience reactions and I only watched it once. Then it becomes about what she regrets from her past and what she's willing to do to move forward, i.e. she's willing to kill kids and move into other universes and take kids away from other versions of herself, which I don't understand. I don't think they understand the multiverse on that one. She's the dark mirror for herself. I don't know. I kind of thought I was going to see the biggest letdown in Multiverse of Madness was that there were no other actors playing the same characters, which is what I would have preferred. Because I kind of thought there was going to be a Doctor Strange who was more my flavor, or like an Iron Man who was more my flavor. That was my thoughts going in. And I'm primarily motivated by looks. So I was like, oh, okay. So we're just doing the same thing over and over again. Because that's what we do in the MCU. Okay. But no, jokes aside, the multiversal themes, I feel like the traditional themes of the multiverse, what I've presented, you know, as my like main things, I feel like they're really lost on the character of Wanda Maximoff. I think it regresses in terms of her character development a lot, because after WandaVision, we saw her moving forward into a more positive place. We see that she's accepted the reality, the fact that she doesn't have any children, and she's moved forward. We've seen her say goodbye to Vision and start accepting her grief instead of projecting onto other people. And I felt like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, here we see a Wanda who's affected by the Darkhold's evil, who is succumbing to it, who is willing to terrorize herself in other dimensions and to terrorize children, I don't know, kill kids, honestly, because this Wanda is a kid killer, which was one of the biggest. MCU Wanda is almost nothing like comic book Wanda, but that one kind of threw me off because whatever she's done, I've really never seen her put kids in danger, so it kind of threw me. I feel like it's Wanda is supposed to have a big breakout role in this movie, but she doesn't. It just retreads old ground that we've already stomped in her television show, things that I thought really should have been over, and I thought we were going to a different place. And honestly, it didn't occur to me that because the MCU is in 616, right? It's like 1999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 I thought the Wanda of that universe, I thought she would have moved on, and that if there was going to be a horror element introduced, I kind of thought it was going to be a Wanda who was wanting to be all powerful. Basically, what evil Doctor Strange was, killing the different versions of himself throughout the multiverse, I thought that's what Wanda was going to be. So my expectations were already kind of thrown to the left. I probably really should have said this on that episode, but didn't. And I feel like Doctor Strange, if this was a better, let's not say better, I think if this was a differently executed movie with different dialogue, different pacing, perhaps different actors and different priorities, I think it could have been a really touching and emotional movie for me. I feel like Doctor Strange's regrets, obviously his primary ones, are the ones that haunt him the most. You know, the loss of the ability to use his hands for his purpose, like surgery, or what was his previous purpose. The loss of the life that he had before that he gave up on. The things that he does not have that are not even a direct result of his life as an Avenger or a direct result of his previously being the Sorcerer Supreme, the things that have been lost truly only under his own power. I feel like those things really could have shined in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, because the movie opens with him at Christine Palmer, his ex-girlfriend, at her wedding to some random black man. The fact that he had the audacity to go to this woman's wedding and be like, you know, I really wish it could have been us. I was like, ew, loser. Because why would you do that? She's getting married. I can honestly see, outside of you being Doctor Strange, I can see a lot why you guys aren't together. And to know that that is his primary regret across universes is crazy. When they went to the other universe that they spent most of their time in, whatever universe it is, with the Fantastic Four, the Inhumans, who else was there? Captain Marvel, Captain whatever Peggy is. Who the hell else was there? The X-Men too. And that hating Negro who is Doctor Strange's whatever his name is. Couldn't tell you if you paid me right now. That other universe where they are, they're like, oh yeah, we've been doing research on the multiverse. This is universe, blah, 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 blah. This is universe, and your universe is 616. And I was like, no, it's not. First of all, this is not Earth 616. No matter how you try and check that out, it's really not. It can't be. So many things haven't happened. It's not 616. But when discussing regrets and the repercussions of your actions, this is actually the perfect place to be at. Because the Doctor Strange of this universe is dead. The Doctor Strange of this universe, I don't remember how it happened because the movie was not good to me, so I was not trying to retain all that information. But the Doctor Strange of that universe, somehow he got the Darkhold, turned evil. They're like, oh, we had to kill him. Because for some reason, all the Avengers are dead, blah, 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 blah. It happened. I was like, oh. But where were all of y'all? So the Christine Palmer of this universe, she works with the not Avengers of this universe. I'm sorry. She does research with them, and she is mourning the loss of the Doctor Strange of her universe. To this Christine, the biggest regret in her life is that they are not together, that she could not save him, that the heroes of their universe, they're not there anymore, and that other universes are able to wreak havoc on theirs. And we see when we get to the next universe where it's even more horrible, and we meet the weirdest Doctor Strange yet, who is just evil. This Doctor Strange is completely marred by his regrets. He lives in a broken universe. It is dilapidated. It is derelict. It is disgusting. His Sanctum Sanctorum is just completely trash. And honestly, the universe looks like it's completely falling apart. This is a Doctor Strange who, his Christine Palmer is dead. She's gone. In many ways, his regrets are different to all the other Doctor Stranges. Now, what's most different about him, honestly, is that he's killing the other Doctor Stranges. He is, one thing about him, he's like, hey, have you ever died in your sleep? Yeah, that was me. I'm gonna kill you. What? Also, the idea that our dreams are just windows into alternate universes was particularly horrifying, because I don't dream a lot, and when I do, the dreams are always scary, even if they're commonplace. I didn't really enjoy that. And I feel like sleep is such a common, sleep or lack thereof, or being trapped in your sleep, it's such a common thread in like horror movies. I don't enjoy that because I have a hard time sleeping, like most horror movie protagonists, and I don't dream, so I didn't like that.
I did not like that.
So I know now if I die in my sleep, that's just the evil me from another universe killing me. I feel like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, if it were differently executed, I think it could have been the greatest movie ever. This was also the MCU introduction of America Chavez, who had the greatest revelation of any person in the movie when she said that when she dreams, there's nothing. So she is the only America Chavez throughout the multiverse.
In editing, somewhat inappropriate because she's not black.
The thing with Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness is, to the movie's detriment, there is no real resolution to Doctor Strange's regrets or to the repercussions of his actions. There's no, he comes to terms with the fact that him and Christine don't belong together at the end of the movie, but the fact that most of this movie is about Wanda Maximoff terrorizing children throughout the multiverse, so much of what could be Doctor Strange character development or a true resolution of his relationship with Christine, even the Christine from the other universe, they have a moment where they acknowledge that they could have been happy together, but the fact that they're not the person that either of them is really looking for, they have literally like a moment of that, but other than that, there's no payoff to any of this new introspection. There's no real reason for that because Wanda decided, like, they didn't defeat Wanda. They didn't overcome her. They killed that evil Strange. Don't get me wrong. They killed him, but they didn't defeat her. She just decided to stop. She killed herself when she destroyed all the copies of the Darkhold throughout the universe and then just was like, yeah, I'm gonna die here. That was the resolution. I'm not saying they should have killed her, but I'm saying they made her just look, look at your choices, look at your life. That feels like Sassy Gay Friend. That feels like I'm quoting the Sassy Gay Friend videos. Look at your life, look at your choices. That was it. That was it. That was the payoff to that whole thing. And honestly, it was exhausting. That was exhausting. Here's where I'd have my coffee, you know, if I drank coffee. As you guys know, I don't really habitually consume caffeine, and I've been kind of trying to find a way to keep my energy level steady throughout the day. And creating this podcast kind of requires a lot of focus, energy, and motivation that I really don't have on my own. And I've been looking for something to kind of help me with that, which is actually why this would be a really good time for that. This is actually why this episode is sponsored by Magic Mind. Magic Mind is a company. They make organic energy drink shots with matcha, cordyceps mushrooms, although I've been assured that they're not the same cordyceps from The Last of Us. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that was lost on me. I hope that amuses somebody, because whatever that is. This was a pretty easy implementation into my morning routine. I've been taking it for the past couple days, and after, I'd say 3 or 4 days, I have noticed that I've been in a better state of mind for working and working out. I've been feeling a lot more balanced. I've also been feeling just more inspired, I guess, because I've been more awake during the day. The work that I've been doing setting up my other podcast, it's not a spinoff, I've been working on setting up an actual play podcast, it's been coming a lot easier, and I've been writing a lot more for and work and pleasure outside of that. And aside from that, there's no sugar, it's nut free, it's vegan, if you're on paleo, if you do keto. And I shared my sample with my producing partner, and we, not for this, I produced this by myself. I shared my samples with my producing partner, and we've kind of been having fun with making it in different ways. They send a little primer on the different ways you can use it and all the ingredients with the package, and we really like the different ways they recommend preparing it. If you don't want to just take it like a shot, you can make it into a latte or you can pair it with sparkling water. And I really recommend you try it and try switching it up because it's really worthwhile. If you would like to try Magic Mind, I really do like it. I think it's worthwhile. You can go to magicmind.com/truebelievers. That's TrueBelievers. Because your girl has her own link. Yes. So with the code TRUEBELIEVERS20, you can also get up to 56% off your first subscription for the next 10 days or 20% off your one-time purchase. That's code TRUEBELIEVERS20 for 56% off. And it also works if you're already a subscriber, you can save a little money on your next subscription payment. Where were we on our journey into the multiverse? Yes, the potential. With limitless universes, with limitless ideas, there is so much potential. And having come from the worst movie I've ever watched for this podcast, actually the third worst movie I've ever watched for this podcast, because the predecessor to this podcast, HeroFlix with Andrew and Chris, we actually did start out by watching Man of Steel and Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, the extended edition, which, as you guys know, I really hate. Going from the third worst movie I've ever watched for this podcast, let's go to the best movie I've ever watched for a film class, Lola Rent. Lola Rent is an experimental German movie from like 1998, I believe. It's alternatively called Run Lola Run in English. And it's about this girl named Lola. She gets a call from her boyfriend, Manny, who sucks. And he tells her that he lost a bunch of money from his boss. And if he doesn't get the money in 20 minutes, his boss is going to kill him. So they have to get the money. And it's like 100,000 Deutschmarks or something. Oh, who don't know? And so he's like, if I don't get this money now, I'm going to go into this supermarket and I'm going to rob this supermarket. So she goes through all these twists and turns. She ends up trying to stick up a bank. So Manny is like, yeah, I'm gonna rob the supermarket. So Lola's like, wait for me. And so she takes off running, right? The whole movie is characterized by these amazing run sequences. Goes down the staircase of her apartment, runs past this man with a dog. At the bank, her dad is talking to his mistress. His mistress says she's pregnant. I'm like, how the hell are you pregnant at your age? But I guess, you know, Sarah had Isaac when she was like 91. So anybody could be pregnant at any age. And really, the lady wasn't that old. I think I was just kind of in the moment at the moment. So I was like, ooh. Anyway, so the mistress is like, yeah, I'm pregnant. Lola comes. She gets into an argument with her dad. Her dad's like, yeah, ho, I ain't giving you no money. So the movie has all these amazing running sequences, right? So Lola, the same thing every time. She lights out of the apartment. She runs down the staircase. She goes past this man with the dog. She goes to the bank because her dad manages a bank. And she's going in like, I've got to get to my dad. My dad will give me the money. Pretend like I just said that in a German accent. Her dad's mistress tells her dad that she's pregnant. And I'm like, girl, how the hell are you pregnant at your age? And really, the lady wasn't even that old. I was just like, you don't expect to see a grown woman whose dad's mistress is telling him that she's pregnant. And I was like, what? So Lola she runs in and she's like, Dad, I need you to help me. I need 100,000 Deutschmarks. And he's like, girl, hell no. And he's like, and you know what, ho? I'm leaving your mama and you're not even my real daughter. So I'm like, what the hell? So then Lola has to run. And when I tell you she's running, she's like running for her life. The running sequences are amazing, but they're frantic because I think they all are like 20 minutes. They're all around 20 something minutes because the movie, I think it's like 80 minutes, and they have three of these sequences, right? So she's running. She runs out of the bank. She gets to the supermarket. She's like, Manny, she helps him rob the supermarket, but then obviously, this is a stupid plan. They're surrounded by cops. She ends up dead. But then time rewinds. And then it rewinds right back to where she leaves the house. Then this time she trips over the dog, and now she gets to the bank late, and then more details keep getting added. Like, her dad's mistress is like, I'm pregnant, but you're not the dad to the baby. But she didn't hear the part before that this lady was sleeping with her dad. I think she just comes in and is like, girl, what the hell, get out, I need to speak to my daddy. So then she decides to take the bank hostage, and she robs the 100,000 Deutschmarks, and she gets out and she has the money and she's gonna meet Manny. And then he got hit by a car, and I was like, what the hell? And then it begins again, and then it gets right back to this. Like, every time the movie diverges, that is like the save point. The whole movie is like a video game, right? And this is where I think we really get into the potential of the multiverse, because it seems like Lola is retaining the possibilities, or retaining knowledge from her past lives, and then administering the possibilities until it works out for the greater good. And then by the third cycle, we're able to see that Lola, it's not some quirk of the film. It really is running on video game logic. It's Lola herself who is rewinding time, and she's able to use supernatural abilities and directly influence the events as they're happening. That really shows the potential of a multiversal story, even though this does seem to remain not only in the exact same timeline, but in the same 20... not the same timeline. It remains in the same time and place, in the exact same circumstances, and in the exact same 20 minutes... but it shows the different ways her path has diverged and the different things that could happen up until it reaches a satisfactory ending. Which, it really gives credence to, like, the extraordinary possibilities of the multiverse and of this concept. And I would be remiss, honestly, to talk about the multiverse without talking about the movie that swept every award, the movie that took us all by storm, truly, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I don't believe, outside of these two movies, I've ever seen the multiverse concept executed well in live action in a film. And it really does. It's really obvious that these are both indie movies without, like, the studio meddling of the big budget movies, because I feel like to the detriment of Spider-Man No Way Home, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, what was the other thing? Oh, this, the Flash movie. I feel like to those movies' detriment, they are studio films with established properties and established characters. The Flash, obviously, it looks like it, and I know I said I wasn't going to talk about it, but it looks like it does take a lot of inspiration from A Flash of Two Worlds, except I heard that both Flashes are Ezra Miller, and I've never liked Ezra Miller as an actor, so I wasn't going to watch it anyway. And in fact, I've never liked Ezra Miller, and I don't like Ezra Miller so much, I'm willing to go against my own self-interest and the thing I love the most, which is Michael Keaton Batman. Which really speaks to how much I was never going to watch that movie ever. I feel like having a big studio behind it, Warner or Marvel, Disney Marvel, I feel like it undercuts the message that the movie could have had if they weren't movies about The Flash or about Spider-Man or about Doctor Strange that had to fit in with a greater shared universe and had to push certain storylines and ideas. The great thing about The Flash, I believe it's number 123, that's what it says in my notes. The great thing about issues like The Flash 123 and that storyline, or Justice League number 21, these were the first issues of their kind. There was nothing to compare it to. It was just a fun thing that they were trying. And it allowed the past and the future to meet. The legacy of DC Comics is kind of where they excel. So to merge the silver and the golden age, it was kind of their thing. So it made sense. But I think every time after that, it's just not as interesting, because it's not just a story about the Flash meeting the Flash of that universe. It's the Flash meeting the Batman that I will never put any Batman above. It's about the Flash meeting Supergirl. It's about the Flash meeting weird CGI characters. It couldn't be just a story about Doctor Strange. It had to be a story about Doctor Strange and Wanda Maximoff, and not really telling a story about different universes or showing other Doctor Stranges or really being that interesting. It became kind of a celebration of what Sam Raimi is known for instead of the things that make the multiversal concept great. Yeah. And with Everything Everywhere All at Once and Run Lola Run, these movies aren't bound in that same way. I think the greatest, honestly, the only thing that holds back Everything Everywhere All at Once as a film is the star, Michelle Yeoh. She is one of my favorite actresses. I truly believe this is one of the greatest action stars of our time. But knowing that and loving Michelle Yeoh, to see a character who is so pathetic, I don't know if that's the right word, but a character like Evelyn Wong, who is literally explicitly told by a version of her husband, Wayman, from another universe, that she is the worst possible version of herself, the frumpy loser, it was kind of hard to experience, because this is, in the universe that we're seeing first and Everything Everywhere All at Once, we're told that Evelyn and, by extension, her daughter Joy are the most perfect universe swappers. That was a silly way to say that. We're told that they're excellent universe swappers. We're told that this version of Evelyn is able to move through universes better than any version of herself because she is the sum total of all of her unrealized potential. And when she is able to tap into the skills of Evelyns from other universes, the memories, the identity, the skill of these other Evelyns, they are vastly different women from her. They are classical opera singers. They are chefs. They are hot dog-handed lesbians. They all live such vastly different and differently fulfilled lives that she is able to become all of them in a way that they wouldn't be able to because they have already realized all of their potential. They have done everything that they are capable of, but because she has failed so many times, she is capable of everything. She's able to tap into Everything Everywhere All at Once because she is Everything Everywhere All at Once. And because in her heart, these women are all still Evelyn Wong. This is still who she is, no matter how her life has twisted and turned. And even under these circumstances, it's not even that this is still who she is, it's still who she could be. She has such boundless potential just because she has failed. And that is so beautiful. She has, even in the next closest universe, her life is just the tiniest bit better. And that's so incredibly interesting. The thing that makes this movie interesting is that even though it is a very high-handed concept, when we get down to the brass tacks, it's the same. The things that Evelyn is looking for in different universes, the acknowledgement, the recognition, the success, the connection, the things that she is searching for are the same in every universe. And this becomes even more apparent when we're introduced to the, I don't even necessarily want to say villain, but the antagonist of the movie, Jobu Tupaki, who is an alternate universe version of her daughter, Joy, who is truly experiencing everything in the multiverse at once. This is an entity who lives a truly multiversal experience and is able to, without the aid of the strange things that Evelyn and everyone else has to do to affect the universe, she's able to move seamlessly through different universes and change the different universes in a seemingly effortless manner. When it came down to it at the end, all Jobu Tupaki wanted, what she was searching for in every universe, was a version of her mother who would understand her. And I would normally say, isn't that what we're all searching for? But it sounds corny. There's no way it doesn't sound corny. So where are we in our journey into the multiverse? I think we're at the proof of concept. So So, my notes here just say Multiversity, Red Sun, Bombshells, and Miles Morales creation. So I think out of order, I'll go right to Red Sun. So Red Sun is a Superman storyline where instead of landing in Kansas, he lands in the USSR and he becomes like the Soviet Superman, which is a really, 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 really boring story. I didn't like the comic. I didn't like the animated movie. But I really like DC Bombshells. DC Bombshells is, I'm not gonna lie, really inappropriate. And there are some places where I'm not exactly sure what was appropriate and what was inappropriate because I'm not part of those marginalized groups. But to me, it was very fun. Bombshells never could have existed without so many storylines that I thought were horrible. Without characters who I would honestly rather never see again. This is a real life ripple moment for me. Bombshells is an alternate universe set during World War II where every male superhero in DC Comics who has a female counterpart, trust and believe she is the main hero. They are in true 1940s form. Big ups to my girl. Big ups to the legend Penny Marshall. In true 1940s form, they are a Justice League of their own. I love it. That was an in real life ripple. And when I talk about ripples, honestly, I was watching Joan of Arcadia with my mom, which sadly only had 2 seasons. I believe Joan of Arcadia might have been canceled during the last writer's strike. But it was a really good show. It was about this girl. You know Joan of Arc? So basically, she's like the new Joan of Arc, and God appears and talks to her in different forms. And God's always talking to her about these ripples, like because you do a kind thing for somebody, your dad ends up getting a new job, or because I tell you to wear a scarf today, and somebody else is cold, you give them your scarf that you didn't even want to have on, and it stops them from getting pneumonia, and they aren't sick for their big Juilliard audition, and they're able to go on and become a world famous singer. I don't know. The idea that there are these little things that that change your life in such minute ways that end up influencing you towards your ultimate, I don't want to say destiny because I don't believe in predestination, but towards a destiny that you want to make for yourself, honestly. It's like, if we weren't talking about God, which we very explicitly are in the context of Joan of Arcadia, we would be talking about the multiverse. When I was going to talk about Multiversity, I was honestly just going to mention that they show, I don't want to say they're the Justice League in every version because they're not, and because Multiversity is honestly, Grant Morrison's such a weirdo. There are reasons why you shouldn't be British and be a witch. And they are some of the reasons. Although we've been knew there were witches in Scotland, I mean, Billy Shakes tried to tell us that. So, Multiversity, basically, there's like an infection spreading from comic book, spreading from world to world. It's like the monitors versus the anti-monitors. It's kind of crazy. I really was just going to say that the whole proof of that there's not a fixed you in every universe is that they kind of do a spin on Red Sun in there. I don't remember what universe it is, but there is one that I quite embarrassingly was telling somebody while I was reading it, and I was like, oh my gosh, these uniforms are so amazing. I'm looking, they have like a Viking Wonder Woman. I'm like, oh, she's so cute with her little braids. I don't remember if she had braids, but I just think she did. I was like, oh, this is so cute. And I'm looking at the Superman. I'm like, oh my gosh, what is he? He was like Overman or something. I was like, oh, what a darling little costume. And I'm looking at everybody else, and then I don't really like Green Lanterns, or I do, but I don't. So I skip over the Green Lantern, and then I look at everybody's outfit, I coo over them, and then I rest my eyes back on the Green Lantern, and I see 2 lightning bolts. And, you know, as a black person from Texas, my sense of danger, when I tell you it was danger, Will Robinson, danger, Will Robinson, I said, hold on, hold on, hold on. 2 lightning bolts. I know, if I don't know anything else, that I'm not crazy, and I usually know what two lightning bolts is. I leaned back, read the description, looked them up and down. They were Nazis. They were like a little Nazi Injustice League. They played me. It was basically like, what if Superman was the commander of the Fourth Reich? I was like, huh? Who was expecting that? What the hell? What the hell? That was such a strange ripple. And bombshells and multiversity. And honestly, like, that's not the only thing that happens in multiversity. I really like multiversity, even if nobody else likes multiversity, which I think other people must, because there have been two different things that spun off of multiversity. But both of those two things were influenced by Superman Red Sun, which I still don't like, even though I like both of those things. And if you want to see another in real life ripple, and speaking of, honestly, the multiverse, freaking Miles Morales himself. If Donald Glover and these were all things that I saw in real time and paid no attention to. I remember hashtag Donald for Spider-Man. I remember thinking, yeah, why can't a black kid, or he wasn't a kid, he was, why can't a black dude be Spider-Man? Why not? It seemed completely unlikely to me, but, you know, I was a Twitter warrior on my old Twitter days, you know. I was on Twitter when we were all learning. I don't want to say we were all learning, but you know that guy who showed us how to cook crack in a microwave and all the other, like, when Twitter used to be the real streets, like, now it's just porno and filth, slur, and filth. But when Twitter was the streets, I was on Twitter then. So I was like, yeah, Donald for Spider-Man. I'm with it. I was reposting. I was retweeting. You know, I was doing the doggone thing. Donald for Spider-Man. And then he wore that Spider-Man shirt on Community, and then they cast Andrew Garfield, and I was like, okay. I only knew who Andrew Garfield was because I watched Doctor Who, so I had seen him before, but I was like, eh. He just became my flavor in like 2018. I don't know. I've managed to, every third time I look at him, I overcome how distinctly British that he looks. And I'm like, Zaddy's Andrew. And actually, no, I don't like that I said that. I'm going to leave it in, but let's pretend like I didn't say that, because it didn't occur to me that he had the same name as Andrew, my best friend. And I don't want to think about anybody calling him Zaddy. So that's canceled. That's done. But they cast him and I was like, oh, okay. And then Donald Glover, they create Miles Morales, and there's confirmation now that Miles Morales' creation, even though I do believe that, you know, Brian Michael Bendis might have some mental issues, because why does Miles' dad have the same name as, like, the president of the Confederacy? But I saw Miles Morales get created in real time. I saw that Donald Glover was the first actor to play Miles Morales. I saw in real time Donald Glover playing Aaron Davis in Spider-Man Homecoming. I saw in real time the effect that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse had. I saw in real time Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse win an Academy Award. I saw in real time in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I saw in real time Donald Glover appear for the second time in live action as Aaron Davis. That was a real life ripple. This is a multiversal effect in action. So we've got proof that, I don't want to say that we've got proof that the multiverse is real, but we've got proof that a lot of these things that they're saying about the multiverse, we've seen them happen in real time. So that brings us to my last real point. Who decides what the right path is? And even this has been explored a lot in the past couple of years. One of the first episodes that we did of True Believers, it was a whole spread of episodes back when we used to do real rollouts and do real research and, you know, work together. I miss you so much, Andrew. It's not the same without you. But back when we used to do real work, we did a whole 3-episode spread where we did after we did our episode zero, where I talked a lot about, I think, Jay-Z, and we answered questions that our friends and family had about why we decided to start a podcast. Our first episode was about Loki the character. We introduced the mythological history of Loki. We introduced the comic book history. We introduced the MCU history. And then we started watching the Loki show, which I also did not enjoy. But I was interested in the multiversal aspect. I was interested in the time variance authority. I wanted to know who decides where the pieces of this so-called sacred timeline lie. The whole point of the show was that there were forces beyond their control who had decided that a sacred timeline existed and that any variation from that timeline needed to be pruned, not to be destroyed, but to be reallocated to a dumping space. And we saw that these are the machinations of not Kang the Conqueror, but one of his variants. Kang the, I don't know, probably the calmest Kang we're ever gonna see. I was so excited. Kang the Conqueror is one of my favorite Marvel villains. And I felt like finally I was getting what I wanted out of the MCU, even though I did not enjoy any part of the Loki show. And honestly, it felt very unfinished. That felt like a show that should have been a hot maybe 10 to 16 episodes. And I feel like only COVID kept it at like 6. But it all could have been one series. It could have been one season. And I felt like leaving and doing a season 2, it wasn't it for me. But I finally felt like I was getting what I wanted out of the MCU with Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. That's another movie. Basically, all the movies that we've done that I went and saw except for Doctor Strange have influenced. Basically every single movie that I went and saw for this podcast has influenced this podcast episode, because I finally, like, we were at a place where I was really excited about what we were reading and what we were watching. But as I've said, I'm a person who doesn't believe in destiny. One of my favorite Star Trek books actually is, it's called Best Destiny. It's about Captain Kirk, and it's about Captain Kirk as a young man and also as an adult, as the captain of the starship, where he discusses that he does not believe in a predestined or a predetermined fate. He believes that his first best destiny that he makes for himself is captaining a starship, that his own ambitions, that his own drive, that is the only thing that can determine his course of action. So who decides what the right path is? Especially when we think of people like Captain Kirk, of course we have to bring it back to the Star Trek movies by J.J. Abrams, which essentially shit on that. And they tell us that who we were supposed to be, our destiny has already been designed. So who determines what's the right path? Who determines where the multiverse lies? We see that again, bringing it back to Miles Morales, we see that a lot in Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. We see that this spider society on Earth 2099 in Nueva York, we see that there is an established canon, that there are anomalies instead of variants this time. We see that travel through the multiverse, even if it's not autonomous, that it can damage other universes. We see that there is an order to the universe, an element of predestination. We see that there are these canon events that must occur, or they might destabilize the universe. We see that Miles himself is being called an anomaly. We're told that in this universe he was never meant to be Spider-Man, and even in Universe 1610, of course. But we even see the after effects of this. We see when he is taken to Earth 42, we see a Miles Morales who was supposed to become Spider-Man, who has instead become the Prowler. Well, whether for good or for evil, we don't see, honestly. It's left on a cliffhanger, because I read later, or maybe before, I don't know, I have a bad recollection of events, that the director of this movie said that this was his Empire Strikes Back, which is honestly fighting words. To what point has destiny been designed? To what point? To what end? To what extent has his destiny been designed? Because I have seen. I went back and watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. There's another spider. So maybe Miles Morales of 1610, maybe he was always meant to be Spider-Man. Maybe he wasn't meant to be maybe he wasn't meant to be bit by that spider. Maybe if Dr. Octavius had not been experimenting with multiversal travel for the Kingpin, he would have become Spider-Man anyway. Maybe he was always meant to succeed Peter Parker. Maybe. But because of the influence of outside factors, we'll never know. We'll never know until the next movie. Who decides? Who decides who lives? Who decides who dies? Who decides what makes the fabric of the universe what it is? Who decides what makes the universe right? Who decides what makes the timeline correct? Who decides what makes your destiny your destiny? And that is a perfect segue into my favorite show of 2022. Mila no Multiverso, which is a Brazilian show. It's in Portuguese, and I watched it on Disney Plus. And it's about this girl named Mila. She turns 15, and her mother has built her a device that can assist her in traveling through universes. It's like a handheld gizmo, which is, you know, it's interesting. They don't really do a lot of multiversal travel. I believe there are like 3 universes that Mila goes through, and they So in Mila in the Multiverse, this young girl, she's 15, she turns 15, and her mom built her a device that can aid her in autonomously jumping throughout the multiverse. What she doesn't know is that her mother is a She knows that her mother is a scientist, but she doesn't know that her mother is like a universe hopping rebel. And what you do when you hop universes, you displace the version of yourself from the universe that you've jumped to into the body of yourself from your universe. So her mother is forced to flee, and she leaves a version of herself from a dilapidated universe in her place, and she tells her just to take care of Mila, you know, make sure Mila is okay. So Mila has no idea that her mother is gone, but when she figures it out, because the people who are chasing her aren't able to fully conceal the damage that's left behind, she's able to use the device that her mother made for her and follow her into a parallel universe, or into not a parallel universe. It truly is a completely different universe. A universe that's not ruled by science. It's ruled by alchemy, which is like a combination of magic and science, I guess. Or it's just more science. I don't know. It's not real. First and foremost, alchemy is not real. And that's where most of the show takes place, in the alchemy universe. As we get deeper into it, when Mila is able to contact her mother on the other end of the multiverse, when she kind of figures the technology out, she learns that there are people called operators who are chasing her. And the more that she finds out about the operators, it's that they believe that they destroy all variant universes that they come in contact with. And they believe that their universe, the Earth One, is the proper one, and they have to destroy all variations of that. My thing is, why does this show highlight the thing that has come up every single time there's been a multiverse thing happen? If you are the person who decides on the classification, as was the case in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness with the Illuminati, would not you number your own universe one? Their Earth was Earth One. The operators were from Universe One. Every single classification, if you're the classifier, you should be one. Unless you have definite proof that yours is a branch universe and you're the first to collect. You know, I meant to say all those moments ago that the Kang from the TVA is Kang Amortis. Like, somehow that just got completely lost in what I was saying because I was so worked up. But Mila in the Multiverse more than anything else. It highlights, and especially because we're given this information about the operators, and it all kind of comes to head in the very last episode of season one. God willing, there's a season two. Who makes the decision on what is the right path? What's the correct universe? This is where all of the ideas come to a head. This is where the themes of identity, because Mila is very simple in, not simple, similar through all the different universes. All these characters are, because like at the core, at the base, they're the same characters. The repercussions for their decisions, like especially in like Everything Everywhere All at Once, the Evelyn and Wayman of all the different universes are paying for the sins of Evelyn from that one universe, and in certain way Joy is paying as well. The repercussions of decisions, of course, in Lola Rent, the potential, it's seen throughout every multiversal property, because Miles Morales, because there is no one before him, because he is the variant, the anomaly, he's able to become anything, the mirror universe, especially the potential of the mirror universe. Every single time goodness and good character is introduced, there is a possibility, even though it's beaten back, honestly, every single time, that things could change for the better. What if? Honestly, what the hell is what if? And the proof that these concepts work, the proof that they come together well, the proof that they're in real life, in real time, we can see the ripples that all these ideas have throughout our own reality. The obviously editorial decisions, who decides what the right path is? We know who decides what the right path is, the creator, the studio, but who decides what the right path is for our life? The thing is, I just told you why it's cool. I don't have an answer. I don't think anybody, maybe the Christian of Earth 23 has an answer, but the Christian of Earth 1 does not. And nobody in this universe has an answer as to why these stories work exactly and what makes them good, because
it varies.
So, true believers, as we conclude our journey, let us embrace the multiverse, not just as a concept with comic books and popular culture, but as a symbol of our boundless human potential. Let us continue to explore the mysteries of existence, to challenge our perceptions of reality, and to celebrate infinite diversity and infinite combinations. That's all for this week's episode of True Believers. Please join me next time, where we will dive deeper into the extraordinary realms of imagination and keep exploring these infinite possibilities. And if you'd like, please, please, please feel like you can check out Magic Mind. I feel like it's really been such an improvement into my daily life, and I really recommend it. I think it's a really good product, and I really endorse it. And if you'd like to go through our link, again, it is magicmind.com/truebelievers. True Believers is available on all major streaming platforms, and we are a member of the Hall of Pods podcasting network, alongside Cape Corner, the SJW Comic Book Club, and the Fandom Optimists. And they can all be found in our link tree below. And as always, if you want to leave a suggestion on what I read or watch, you can find and DM me, email me at number1truebelieverspod@gmail.com, join our Discord, or you can visit our website, number1truebelieverspod.wixsite.com/1tbpod.
Hit that like and subscribe, guys!
Okay, that's perfect.